The 27th story, The 10 Great Rules. The new nation needed some rules for its guidance. Did you ever stop to think that everything we do has a rule back of it somewhere? When we try a new game, we first learn the rules, and no one can be a good player who does not understand them thoroughly. The older we grow and the harder games we play, the more rules we find for playing them. College football and basketball are much more difficult and have harder rules to follow than the game that is played in the vacant lot or the school basement. But every boy or girl player hopes someday to play the bigger game. Nearly everyone enjoys watching a game or a race and is eager to cheer the winner. But how soon we lose interest if the players or runners disobey the rules and foul each other. It is then no longer a true test of skill or endurance. Did you ever hear war times called the game of war? When the general is intending an attack on the enemy, he spends many hours planning the position of his forces and the order of attack. The greatest general is the one who sees farthest ahead and plans every detail before giving his men their directions. And the subordinate officer who best understands and carries out those directions or rules is most valuable to his commander. Every nation has chosen men whose business it is to make wise rules for the people, that men and women may play fair with one another, and that the country may be well cared for. Each nation has a name for these bodies of men. In England, they call them the Houses of Parliament. In America, they say the Houses of Congress. But whatever their name, their business is to make rules or laws, and the lawbreaker must be punished because he spoils the game of life for those around him. The Apostle Paul, who lived many, many years after the time of our story, wrote often of the game or race of life and told of the highest and greatest rule of all by which we may be guided. He says, "Whereunto we have attained, that is, the very best way God has taught us, by that same rule let us walk." And he calls the reward for those who run the race or play the game well the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. It was very necessary that this new nation, which was so different from every other because God had chosen it to bear his message to the world, should have rules which would make it plain to all people the truth that God's plan is best. The very wisest men that ever met could not have given a nation such rules as were given the Israelites, for God himself gave them to Moses, the great under-officer. And while the rules that men make must be constantly changed as the world grows older and knows more, these rules which God gave on Sinai so many thousands of years ago have never needed to be changed in any way, but are accepted by all civilized nations today as the foundation for their own rules. That is why we call them the 10 Great Rules, or the 10 Commandments. We are so used to these commandments that we can hardly believe that there was ever a time when men did not know it was wrong to do the things they tell of. But as we read the stories of the Israelites and the people about them, we shall see that they knew very little about right and wrong as God sees it until they learned the great rules. The Israelites were worshippers of Jehovah, but they had lived so long among the Egyptians that they needed the first rule, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." The Egyptians worshipped many, many gods. They even bowed down before their sacred animals and reverenced their mummied cats and crocodiles. All the people about them believed in other gods, and this new nation with so much to learn needed a rule against these things. Do you think that rule is needed nowadays? Not for gods of stone or mummied cats, but for the things which people sometimes care more for than they do for the true God. There are the things we eat and wear and play with, and with which we make money, which sometimes make us forget the word which was given for all time and for all people, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." The second rule showed how hard it was for men in those days to understand that they could pray without anything to look at, and that the images did them no good. So God's message through Moses was, "Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image." People have often thought since then that there were things which they needed more than they needed God. Money, some have said, would do them more good than anything else. But if we work most of all for money, without thinking of the right, we will miss the prize of the high calling. We will have broken the rule. A mighty man, mighty because he managed himself, said one day, I could have made a pot of money out of that, but I should have sold myself. Some of the Israelites must have been growing careless. They had been brought up to be reverent, but somehow they were speaking God's name lightly, even using it falsely and in fun. So God knew they needed the third rule. Thou shalt not take the name of Jehovah God in vain. Has anyone needed this rule since that time? Has he in speaking or reading or singing spoken God's name untruly? That is, without meaning what he said? If so, he has missed the mark. For, so it was told the Israelites, Jehovah will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain. Moses and his people had 7 days in their week, just as we have. God made them know that work was a very good thing for them all. They would never grow strong without it. Men, women, and children all needed to do something. So the next rule said, 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work. Every day of the sixth was a work day, and the seventh was a rest day. About that seventh part of the time, God gave a special rule. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. That day was to be the purest, cleanest, holiest day of all the week. It was to be a day for thinking about God and the rules he had given, which they could not do so well on other days when busy about their work. As God watched the children of Israel, he saw that they did not always act rightly toward one another. Some of them would get so angry when working or playing together that one would even kill the other. The fathers and mothers were not always cared for as they should be. Sometimes one would steal that which belonged to another and hide it among his own things. The happiness of some of the homes was spoiled because a man would take away another man's wife and persuade her to live with him. Or perhaps a woman would leave her home and go away with the husband of another woman. And again, the people would come before the judges and bear false witness, would tell a lie against their neighbors, while many of them were wishing for what belonged to someone else. God said these things would never do. Rules must be given that would point out a better way. So the first of these, which was really commandment number 5, was, Honor thy father and thy mother. This did not mean only loving obedience and respectful words, although it meant those too, but it meant also living one's whole life in such a way that father or mother might say proudly, That is my son, this is my daughter, and that others would say they must have had good parents. A beautiful promise was added for the keeping of this rule, Honor thy father and thy mother. It was, That thy days may be long in the land which Jehovah thy God giveth thee. The next rule was a very short one, Thou shalt not kill. Of course the Israelites knew from the old days in Egypt that if one man killed another he would be punished, but they needed to be reminded that God would not have them do it. That command means a great deal. For us it means, Thou shalt not take away life in any way, by hurting people, by making them ill and less able to enjoy living, or by overworking them. And then came the rule about the home. Each father and mother with their big and little children were to keep a home as beautiful as they could. The command, Thou shalt not commit adultery, forbade anyone to break up a home by persuading the father or the mother to leave it. It forbids the doing of an impure or unclean thing. All the people everywhere needed the next rule, Thou shalt not steal. There were so many ways of taking what did not belong to them. If anything was purposely broken or spoiled, that thing was stolen. If anyone cheated on a pound of meal or a bushel of grain, he was a thief. And one rule of the game of life, Thou shalt not steal, was broken. And there were things which God said were for other people. He said, When ye reap the harvest of thy land, Thou shalt not wholly reap the corners of thy field, neither shalt thou gather the gleaning of thy harvest. Thou shalt leave them for the poor and for the sojourner. For us, that means that a share of our good things belong to someone who has less. If we break this rule, we steal from the poor. The ninth commandment was the rule about lying. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. People have kept on forgetting that rule ever since it was given. Someone has said, to lie is worse than to steal, for one can return the stolen goods, but very often the lie cannot be taken back. It has gone from one lip to another, a lie that others in telling it have thought to be the truth. Last but not least came the tenth commandment. Sometimes a man had a prettier wife, or a better house, or a stronger manservant, or a fatter ox than his neighbors, and the neighbors kept wishing they were his. Thou shalt not covet, said Jehovah. Be content with your own, or by hard work make them as good as your neighbors. These were the 10 great rules which the Hebrews called the 10 words, and which we call the 10 commandments.